Well, this is an interview with Laurie O'Brien on the 14th September at 10:30 a.m. Thank you, Laurie, for doing this.
Can we turn that off?
It's still recording.
It's still working.
Oh, dear.
Stop it for a minute.
Yes. Just going to leave it there, Laurie. So, initially, how did you come to be in Fitzroy?
The particular house that you ended up in, or the house?
Well, I come to
the particular house. There was a good deal of photographic work done at the time he was doing it, and in some cases before. The earliest was early Melbourne architecture by May Casey, May and Dermot Casey.
So this
is 1953.
So this is before you come to Fitzroy in 1957.
Yeah. Now, May Casey, Joan Lindsay, Dale Lindsay's wife, and Tom Freeman, the architect. Now, Robert Boyd's A Strange Home was the book everybody read. But that wasn't historical. It gave a sort of typology of house designs, but it didn't link them to anything in particular. Now, the Town and Country Planning Association became interested. That was about 1954.
Who was the town and
place? I don't know who was there, but that, as an organisation, they expressed an interest in conserving houses, old houses, but I don't know what they did. Now, in 1956, the National Trust was started, and that was a major organisation. That was launched in Wilson Hall by the governor, and it was that gave it a certain tone. And the
were you there?
No. No. But the National Trust, with its own history, the first 40 years, and they describe the hub of the organisation as Darrell Lindsay, who was then the director of the National Gallery. I know this is a bit long-winded, but you need the context. And there was a lot of limited amounts of academic support, but a professorial level, Professor Lewis from architecture, Professor Burke from fine arts, and Professor Turner from botany. So that's really for the sort of three phases of the trust, or three angles. Now that was 56, and in 1957 was the following year, the National Trust established what it called a Survey and Identification Committee. They had to find out what needed to be preserved. And now John was on that. I think the other people were architects, so I'm not quite sure how he got on it. In 59, John had sabbatical leave. I don't know what the terms were, but according to the National Trust history, it was to research old buildings, which is a very general thing. He became particularly interested in bluestone. You know how it's a certain feature grabs people and they're interested in a particular area. And to try and find bluestone houses, sometimes in the country, weekends. The trust, the survey and identification committee had four categories of houses it knew about or was told about, which they investigated. A, B, C and D. A were to be preserved at all costs. That was the buildings of national importance, you know, like Pat's Cathedral for the building. B was highly significant, to be preserved. C was worthy of preservation. D was interesting. Preservation is desirable.
Mm-hmm.
John was on that survey identification committee. He got a but touch from C to B. Presumably with the agreement. Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry to this very wordy introduction to that. Now, what the National Trust history says is, although many of the early members of the Trust came from Tarang and South Yarra, it attracted from the beginning a growing number of academics for the other side of town. It's a wonderful phrase for the other side of the track. The dark side. Some certain gives examples, of course. David Saunders, the architect of the house, wrote the first major book on.
Where did he live?
He lived in Parkville. It mentions David Saunders, John O'Brien, Miles Lewis, who grew up in Parkville, then moved to Carlton, and by 1976 he bought a house in Fitzroy. Oh, the two others I mentioned, George Tibbetts, who was in the architecture school, and Frank Straw, who was an archivist, I think. Now,
university archivist.
University Archives, founded with University Archives, with Jeff Blaney and others. Now, in 56-57 we went house hunting, looking for somewhere to live. That wasn't too far from the university. We thought Carlton would be too expensive because Carlton was just beginning to attract quite a number of people we knew, academic people. So we drove around all Churchill village where houses were for sale, and you know, this can take forever, I don't know how long it took. And we walked and drove down Hannah Street. We said, how extraordinary. We saw this number 35. And I'm sure we thought we'd never seen it before. But in fact, the case said, and they included it in their 1953 book, so they should have seen it. And it has this like B classification. Yes, well, yes. Well, what amazed us was written on, what was written on top, A.D. 1854, E. Wills. Oh, the other way around, there's an evil thing. I mean, you see dates on houses and you see names, but you don't often see A.D. And a friend of a friend who saw it many years later looked at it and said, how vulgar. I'm going to think, I suppose it is. I suppose it is very pretentious. But that was that sense at the time. It seemed amazing and rather wonderful. I'm knocking on the door, which of course is pretty intrusive. Was told that the owner lives next door. A nice, rather quiet old man said, this is next door.
Which side?
Oh, there's no next door here.
No, so was it on the west side or the east side?
Oh, on the east side.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They also, the Casey's also said he rent that little house, which was immediately opposite 35. This was number 35 Hammond Street. Now, that's the only photograph of the house on that side.
Yeah.
All the rest were demolished.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well before we arrived.
Oh.
Well, not well before, yeah. 7 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it looks like a good little house.
Yeah, it does,
doesn't
it? Mm-hmm. Double fronted.
Yes. Yes. Now.
Refined curved stone.
Mm. Yes.
Okay.
Right. They use
the tower pointers.
Yes. Neck and pointed.
Mm.
I think it was neck.
Yes.
I don't know what that word means. Anyway, that's it. That was option. But not when we arrived. Now, we found that the owners were a brother and sister, Cliff and Edith. Edith, he was always known as. Cliff and Edith, Salmon. She was a teacher of laundry at the J.H. Boyd School in Leicester Colony, which is not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I knew someone who'd been there who said she was a very good teacher of laundry. I think she didn't stick to laundry, but the full range was available there. Now, they'd been left, brother and sister, they'd been left the property they were living in, which was in Martha's house, called Montefiore Villa, which is in this picture book.
This is the house on the east.
Ah, yes. Hang on. Yes, it doesn't look as good as it was. It was most elaborate, double-fronted and most elaborate. Mm. Now, they've been left this property and number 35. And Edie was referred to as 35. That's why it's called 35. Now, they've been left the property by their aunt, Sarah Nellis. And they'd grown up with her in Fitzroy. Well, presumably in Hammond Street. Now, their aunt Nellis had bought the farm in 1931 from the Gray family. Now, the Gray family, this is quite interesting, the history of the house. The Gray family had inherited it. No, they had. They didn't. Wait a minute. I've got this out the wrong way. Their aunt Nellis, Sarah Nellis, had bought it from the Gray family in 1870, I think. Now, the succession of tenants, because Edward Wills, who built it, went off to Goldfields. It's a real Goldfields story.
Mm-hmm.
Off he went to Kangaroo Flat near Bendigo. And he'd made a lot of money by then because he had quarries supplying stone to major buildings, mm-hmm. bridges and so on. So he took plenty of money with him to Bendigo and lost most of it. So that the house had three owners, Wills, who built it. The Gray family, Mr. Gray was a cooper. No, that's, he had it owned it from 1870 to 1931.
Mm.
And Sarah Nellis, the aunt of these two brothers and sisters.
But the Gray family didn't, they actually had tenants.
Oh, we have a succession of tenants, including the Victorian Infants Asylum, which was there for, I think, 4 or 5 years. Now,
how did you find that out?
Oh, the lyrically things up in the right books. But you could see it when we of those women on the side wall, that's the east wall, where the blue stone wasn't pointed, it was rather rough. But you could see Victorian infant asylum in rough. It couldn't have been whitewashed. It would have been painted on. It was fairly famous, but you could read the words quite clearly. That's made it that lasted so long. Because the Victorian infant asylum was there from 1887 to about 81. So it started very well. So that was the house. Now, it was a rooming house because E and Duke Sam had a large house in Smallsbury, Philip. That was too big for them. But they had been left this big cumbersome house next door, 35. And of course, we asked her, would she ever thought of selling it? She was mainly interested in teaching and in schools. Almost the first thing she asked me was, what schools do you go to? She wasn't really interested in Fitzroy as a place, I don't think. Well, it's hard to say. Anyway, I think she was quite pleased to get rid of it because she had to just keep her eye on these towns.
So how old were they by that moment?
The sounds.
Yes.
60.
30.
So, was she interested in selling? Now, she immediately put in the hands of a lawyer. I mean, they had lots of money because Aunt Mills had other properties. Wasn't the main thing. But her lawyer said, yes, I had to sell it. And I think she was somewhat relieved. So,
have you had a look through by this stage?
Yes. Not much, because it was further fence there.
And what was your first reaction when you actually went into the house? Did you think, was it a lot of work or not?
Well, there was the house, and then there was the kitchen, which was separate. It was like an old country property, really, with a separate kitchen, there of fire and everything. And then there was a stable with room for one horse and on top, you know, a lot of space for grain and so on. Oh, it was large and clearly the stable was pretty derelict and really needed a lot of work. The external kitchen, there was no bath, no water in the house. It was a little funny lean-to bathroom, which was for everybody, and everybody went to have it, 6 husbands and wives, yes. So everybody had to go to this external kitchen. Really, most inconvenient, I'm sure.
For the Blue Lorry in 1970, there was no sewage supply to the houses at Royal Terrace either.
What year?
1970. Because when everybody renovated, they had to install the water courses to it.
That's interesting. I don't know about that. There was a boy and girls loop station out the back.
Behind the kitchen?
No. Beside the stable.
Yes.
Because I suppose you had to have one of the names to
remember.
Yes. Yes. Now, we negotiated a price which was £4,750, which was, we were told, about average at the time. We did not. Cheap, not expensive. We negotiated a mortgage through Melbourne University, they sent out the sniff around and they had a really good look. And they said it was, considering its age, Mr. Fries, it's in remarkably good condition. of course, the Housing Commission was short as they had, in the phrase, as it always is with government, they had no plans to develop any more property in Haddon Street. They had already developed half the street. So, how naive we were. Whether it would have, if we'd been a bit more, experienced perhaps, we wouldn't have taken any notice of that. But we probably still would have bought it, I don't know.
Interesting question.
Yes.
But the fact is that you did get to go to the Housing Commission.
Oh, I think so. We'll probably send a letter.
Do you think the solicitors thought that that was worthwhile you doing?
And
I think about it.
The lawyers didn't raise it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it really was not anything they were particularly used to dealing with.
Yes. But John did, was concerned enough to get some sort of...
Yes. I think, it would have to be. Now, the next thing we did was consult John Now, John and Phyllis Thursday were described as the Chinese honorary architects, which means they were extraordinary by just about everyone. Everybody went to the Murphys, what do we do? Yes, they drew a plan for rewiring the building and a damp course in front. They recommended builders, Mr. English and Mr. Purse. I always remember them because they were Art and Billy Grahams. I think that was the year. Can you remember what it
was? Yes, I can remember.
Anyway.
Came back against me, but he's first one of them.
Mr. Purse was a delight to watch. He was a wonderful character, so he did a lot of work on old places in England. I think he was English. He hung a lot of the doors, and there was a thing that had to be done. I don't think there's much more to be said about actually.
So you've gone into the renovation.
We got into the renovation.
And you bought the kitchen inside?
Well, we left it as it was, and we'd had a huge range and a room on top that was so hot in summer. Mm. It did have a slate roof, but inside. And put a kitchen inside. We were so inexperienced.
About the toilet, and the bathroom,
all very
sewage.
Well, I didn't hear any talk about the sewage. I just don't remember thinking of it. So it must have been connected. Yes, I think that's really all. I mean, it sounds...
What was it like moving in? When did you actually move in?
I was wondering about that.
And what did you say?
Well, I remember having one room that really looked quite reasonable. I spent most of the time in that. Anyway, John got to work and went around photographing K. Moore instead of course in Fitzroy itself. And he was often asked, are you from the Housing Commission? So, you know, it was, people were anxious, a lot of people were very anxious. Kids would come and say, oh, take a photograph of me. And me, I think the kids got it from being photographed. I think he gave them from so that's there we are in Fitzroy. It's rather wrong background. What was it like as a neighbourhood street? These photographs in the Fitzroy book are of the north side. The south side had been demolished, except right at the top on the south side were the Cairo Flats. That's the name of them. They were called Cairo. I don't know how many, but there would have been about 10, I think. Designed by Best Overend in 1936, and still regarded as avant-garde. They look exactly the same on these drawers that have been 1936. Owned by one family till 2000. Yes, and alongside, between the Cairo Flats and which had a large garden. I mean, they were quite attractive looking. And then there was a lane. And then, because all the buildings had been demolished, there were eight, what were called then, maisonettes. You don't hear them, I see. Eight maisonettes. Now, say the Housing Commission sold them at auction. And most of the purchases were what were then called New Australians. Now, I think that was because they liked to be close to the city and they didn't have any feelings about Fitzroy as being a dump to live in. So, I've forgotten how many houses. That's right, there were 72 houses altogether.
Yeah. Can I just ask you, Larry, you know, you said a dump to live in. Was the word slum?
Oh, yeah. So it was slum. Yes, well, the Bottom of St. Lawrence opened a newspaper in 1952 called Slum News. Now, of course,
And who was the most identity?
Who?
The opener of the
film
news.
Oh, Starla Packer. Oh, Starla Packer. Yes. Sorry, Rich Brother. Yes. Now, look, see, this is called Physician Slum News.
Yes.
Now, that's, you just look and see the perhaps you could turn it on. See, Slum News.
There you go.
Okay. 52.
For who?
Now this is Fitzroy Street. Yeah. Let's see how. Where's this? Here, that's what I'm looking for. You can turn the thing off. Look.
This is the one that Harry Humphreys bought his. Beginning to pop up collection from Charles Conway.
Now this is
that's
the Barry Humphreys was a schoolboy at Melvin Brown, and he'd come here, but he didn't know where the grammar voice he went. What's his name?
Yes, in
his
school uniform.
Oh yes, in his school
uniform. And the antique shop, as it was, had Charles Conway collections.
Yes. Oh yes, he got amazing things. Yes. So, I thought, because you were talking about it the other day.
Yes.
Yes. this is happening. Now, you can put it back on to that. Here's a, this is Hanover Street.
Yes.
We'd be here. Yes. 35 would be about here.
Mm.
Fitzroy Street. Palmer Street.
Mm.
Nicholson Street. So, this area was raised.
Mm.
And Father Tucker, there's a letter in the Brotherhood of the Archives from Father Tucker saying he didn't like high-rise flats. He didn't like flats. But the thing to do is to clear the slums. He has said, has to leave it to the men who are experiencing these things to decide what form. So he was just rushing there to get those houses demolished. So,
so the masonette slurries,
they are gone there.
On this side of
yes, that's where the masonettes are.
On the side.
Well, the masonettes are about as far as that.
Yes.
And then walk up flats on the corner.
Yes. Was the Anglican Church quite a large landlord in Fitzroy?
I don't think so. You think he agreed in Sydney? I don't think so. It could have been done, actually.
Yes.
But it's a pretty large area.
Mm.
And it had 72 houses, only 14 of which were thought worthy of being repaired. Could be saved. 40 out of 72, so that's in that area.
And that includes the Christian Israelites. The Bluestone Church here on the corner.
Yes, well, I'm not sure. It would have been the Christian Israelites. Yes.
Oh, it's on Fitzroy Street, isn't it? It's
that's
up
right.
Here,
yes.
In this corner.
Yes, well, I think there was a church mentioned in that side. So many houses, so many factories.
Yes.
Not many. One church, you rather, would have been the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was not as reviewed. Not so. Where are we? That's right. So that opposite 35, well, I keep calling it 35 the way it is, opposite 35 was a two-story pair.
Mm.
It's still there.
Yes.
You know. They thought that was worthy of preservation. Well, it was done up and one of the ceilings fell in. And that some people enjoyed that.
So just to clarify, Laurie, the masonettes, were they considered slums or were they...
No, they were more rebuilt. They've just been finished when we moved in. These are the ones that were bought by new Australians who didn't buy them. At least that's all. That's one of the reasons, I suppose.
Mm.
I don't know what the price of now here, how much they cost. So, yeah. So that's the south side. Now the north side. Yes. That little house was, I think, 1853. So it was older. That was there
mm-hmm.
when 35 was built.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure of the name. Now, these people, it's quite interesting who lived there. A postman lived in one of them. This very large house, it's even larger than it's even that fashion at the back, two-story bluestone, occupied by the Leeson family, they were connected with the theatre.
Mm.
And I think they had a lot of theatre people living there. And I don't know who lived in these. All of these were demolished. And as for those, Montefiore Villa, the other part of Montefiore Villa, and one of the tenants, one of the 35 tenants moved down there, husband and wife David, I think they did better, of course. I think they had a bus. Of course, they were the ones later, by the Hurricanes. You can see in that photograph the twin towers of the Methodist Church. And you can see that the trees are growing out of the gutter area. What was called a fur factory that looked like a two-story house? That was the only commercial thing, I think. Now, next door to 35, on the Nicholson Street side, was a very fine tenanted terrace occupied by Mr. Peter Kerr, who was from Northern Italy. Now, he had a wine saloon in Brunswick Street.
And how recent arrival had he been?
He came out, I don't know how long he'd been in that house, but he came from, I think it was Turin, up in the north of Italy. I think before the Second World War.
Where was his wine saloon?
In Brunswick Street, opposite the Brotherhood in Florence. And it featured in their film, 46 or 47, which was called Jail Does Not Cure. They took an interest in alcoholism when you had to do the choices of Sunday afternoon. And it was made for them by Irene Mitchell, who was from the St. Martin's Theatre in South Yarra, buttonholed, of course, by Father Tucker, who was very good at getting this stuff. Anyway, Mr. Chiller's wine saloon, which is big drunk thing thrown out the door.
Did you get to meet Father Tucker very often?
No, I didn't.
You would have been here, Laurie, as this house was being demolished?
Yes. Yeah, I think. That's about. I don't know what. That's true. I was trying to think. The thing about the street. But it didn't finish at Brunswick Street. I'm still a high rise one, but it finished it went right down to Young Street. So there's more to the run. Really, this is a little bit optimistic when we were there. There was a milk bar. There were two milk bars. There was one up near Cairo. It was rather larger. And it was built for the people in Cairo to eat. So, really, Hannah Street was nothing like a community. The Cairo people were city centred. Most of them worked in radio or something like that, but had to be close to the city. Mr. Chur had retired, and early, I think, and he had property all over the place. He had a very good terrace row, I think, in Nicholson Street, much further north. Now, he just spent his time looking after that house. And he had two, I think, time will tell, but I think two, possibly three other properties there. And he had one of which he called his orchard, and quite a lot of fruit trees. I mean, he was really the model owner, just about all his parts of the house or currency. That's why it became later the most unfortunate story, but I'll leave that. Yes.
Well, I'm going back to call.
Okay.
But this is very good, though.
Yeah.
So this is Hannah Street as a neighbourhood where the shop on the corner of the Cairo flat.
Yes, that was built for them to. It is a restaurant, really.
Yes.
And that's the cabin of the. Yeah. Are we on again?
Yes. So that was they used it as a kitchen in the Cairo flat at the corner.
Oh, they had their own kitchens, but. Yes. The what became the milk bar was a little restaurant
where
they could eat.
Yes.
The tenants, I suppose other people could, I don't know, because by the time we got there, it was changed.
Yes.
Well, once it was a neighbourhood back, Brunswick Street, of course, as always, as still was the major street where most things were. Now, on the west side, that's the Carlton Garden side, there were a couple of fruit and vegetable shops, and there was one near the corner of Hanover Street, which we ignored for a while, and then until we found out that what you had to ask for stuff out the back, that there were good stuff out the back. Yes. And then further down, the two chief Italians who lived above the shop until the 1960s, and they moved on. In the corner of Victoria Street, there was a wonderful shop called Chandler's Hardware. They kept everything and spilled out onto the street, that sort of shop. There was a Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, which was there from the 1930s. The new building, what they called their new building, went up in 1959. That's the one that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
It looked from the street, it looked to have a tennis court on top, you know, that sort of wiring around. Now, there were second-hand furniture shops, or junk shops, they were known as, and some of them could get very cheap stuff in them. Like these kitchen chairs we got there. Now, in Fitzroy Street, there was a gospel hall, and they used to conduct services in nearby streets. Very loud. I don't know what you call the instrument they had, but they had about six voices, at least. And they set up in the street and perform.
And where was the Gospel Hall?
In Fitzroy Street.
Is that the Independence Hall? The little.
Well, it date became a Muslim prayer room.
Oh, yes. By Palmer Street.
Yeah. On the Brunswick Street side.
Yes.
Anyway, we found them very irritating on Sunday mornings at the hall.
And so you could hear them down at Hanover? You could hear them down at Hanover Street?
No, they moved around. wheeled their little musical instrument around and sang and gave a service whether you wanted it or not. And we had a very large vinyl record of Vivaldi, Dixit. We used to open the window upstairs, pouring them and try to shut them up. Of course, had no effect whatever. They might have moved a few feet further away, but I don't think he even did that. Now, there's a picture here in this 1972 book of phonograms. There, that's a street. What's that she's playing?
That looks like a mobile piano.
Yeah, well, I think that's...
And that looks to be outside the hall that belongs to the Christian Israelites.
Oh,
looks very similar. We had to check it.
It looks like wood.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Mm. Anyway, the Christian Israelites didn't do that.
No.
But,
No.
They were... See, this is 72.
Yes.
This was in the 50s. 60s, maybe.
Yes.
On the east side of Brunswick Street, further away, there was Bunton's office furniture, the dry cleaners, the savings bank. Then there was the large Fitzroy Methodist Church, very large church, two spires. And then King William Street, there was All Saints Church, which had been Methodist, and All Saints Presbytery, right on the corner, where it still is. And that was previously the National Hotel, which Edward Wills had designed, or had built.
Yes.
They were the designers.
Yes.
Then in Gertrude Street, which was regarded as the worst street in the sense of having more alcoholism than any other, Joy DeMucci's art school in the Fitzroy book. It's good on that. Growing up in a Greek family, and they lived near the corner of Napier Street and Gertrude Street, and she describes the drunken scene. But we used to go and eat at a restaurant called Balkan, not the Balkan, just Balkan, when 35 was being done up, before the kitchen could be used. We eat at this Balkan, which is a wonderful place. Huge meals for very hungry people, mainly seem to be single men, who probably lived in nearby rooming houses. I don't know, but they were obviously very hungry and they were given these huge meals. It was owned by, or run by, Miss Duchamp, D-U-C-H-O-N, I think. Now, she lived in George Street. I think she owned the house. Just near, is it Manfax Paints?
Yes.
On the corner there.
Yes.
Yeah, well, she lived in that first house, which is still there. It's in good condition,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
Well, everything is running condition, seems to be. Yes.
So where was the restaurant?
In Brunswick Street. Gertrude Street, did I say?
Yes.
Gertrude Street. Near Brunswick Street. Mm-hmm. You know, the corner that went from the high rise for the emotions.
It's interesting, it's called Balkan.
Yes. The phonograph, John took a phonograph on a few times. Or it must be the Balkan, but it's just a Balkan written on the window.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great place to eat. I have been honest, it was the one I used to go to.
Because was a Russian component, that section of Gertrude's trade.
Russian? Mm-hmm. Look, it was every group, I'm sure. It was very multicultural all around. Yeah, I've had this show in the movie, he doesn't talk about Macedonians because of this rivalry, and the rivalry, the total misconception of who came from where.
Yes.
But a lot of Macedonians as well as Greeks. Mm. Yeah. Now, a very large area was occupied by Stone's Timber Yard. Now, Stone's Timber Yard, well, this is Condell Young, maybe a little charge, that huge block, just by the Fitzroy Town Hall.
Mm.
Fitzroy Town Hall had no grand surroundings, whatever. No. It just seemed to sprout from where it was.
Mm.
Now, the present one end of that, where the area where Stones Timber Yard was, is now the Adventure Playground. And there's a child care centre there, near the town hall. John used to get timber from there because he liked carpentry. Did some various made things. Although most of the stuff he got was from Wheel and the Wreckers, that's where all the good stuff was. But that was out of Sunshine, not at Fitzroy. But the new stuff, or relatively new stuff, was from Stones Timber Yard. A lot.
In fact, there's Wood Street that runs off that area.
Wood Street runs off that, does it?
It runs, yes. and there's a house up for sale at the moment that edges onto that preserve in front of Fitzroy Town Hall.
Yes, I do remember that. Yes, it does. That's right. Yeah. So that was it there, that's the main places I remember. And then of course there was the police station.
In its current location.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we heard of course that the Fitzroy police were pretty rough with their clients. Mr. Chur, who had the wives with him, he advised us, we got to know him quite well, he advised us to always ring the police if you had any problem, any trunks in the street, ring the police.
Yes.
So we witnessed one of these situations. It was a very loud singing in the street, and obviously Mr. Chiller had run the police. They came around with a dizzy dam, and he was singing very loudly, and they gestured him to get in the van. He insisted he finish his song. And they stood there until he'd finished, and then they shoved him in the van. We were quite impressed. That was, I suppose, a public area.
Mm.
Anyway, they treated him, appears to treat him quite well.
Mm.
Now, of course, in the Fitzroy Town Hall was the Fitzroy Council. And it was such a small municipality.
Mm.
You knew everybody. Mm. Everybody who worked in the town hall.
Mm.
Well, what Graham Davison says, like Richmond and Collingwood, the fiefdom of the old ALP.
Mm.
But apart from its politics, it's accommodating. In other words, John got to know Mr. O'Halloran, though, I think was the, he was the deputy town clerk, I think, probably became it. He let take great books home. I think he should never have done. But then he's got a place. It was very casual. I mean, it was a road rage and garbage council, but
very trusting.
That's how much I know about trusting, really. The rubbish was collected in those, in the cylindrical metal bins that everybody had in those days. Very loud. And I think they made it as loud as possible. There were quite a number of strikes too. Frequent strikes. But the head guard, Billy Wormsley, and he lived in Fitzroy, so his mate Snowy, they used to cut our pepper tree every year because it grew so fast. There was a huge pepper tree in the backyard. A huge nest was found in the base of it. No, there's a couple of birds here now. But this pepper tree, it grew so fast that every year it would hit the windows and you could see it there. Although that's late, still there. But, now Snowy and Mr. Walsh would come and cut the tree back. Cut it to the tip, of course, the council truck. No, I suppose we gave them money for cutting it, but not for destruction. That was a council. And it was a very social occasion. Lots of beer. You had to give them beer. People did give them beer at Christmas anyway, but this was rather a special annual occasion. Now those three trees that appear in the photograph there, they were moved. The trees were moved, or new trees put in, I think, quietly, to a footpath. Now Tom thinks 1962 or thereabouts. And he thinks, I don't know whether this is the case, it was because the council sweeper, which was an enormous structure, it couldn't operate with the trees in the garden. Yes.
They're actually growing in the roadway. They're actually growing on the roadway.
Well, on the roadway, I suppose, not in the gutter, that's true, yes, it was in the road. Now, we've been over the south side, and we, that's right, the south side of Hatteras. Now, really, the main thing left to say is about the story of the Housing Commission in Fitzroy, or in our area of Fitzroy. Now, the St. Lawrence State, as it was called, you know, where the Maisonettes are, that was, the demolition and rebuilding, that was 1952 to 56, just before we came to live there. Now, that's what they said, of course. They told us in 57 they had no plans for acquiring any further property in Hannah Street. Now in 59, it was what's called, the Housing Commission conducted what was called the Shaw Daily Report. It was a windscreen survey of the inner suburbs. Now there's a pub, it's in the corner of Elgin Street and Drummond Street. Now the pub is called Shaw Daily Slum. Who on earth would know that? What's that supposed to? Shaw Daily Slum, I mean, what a silly name for a pub. Anyway, that was, I suppose, of course, in memory of the windscreen survey. Because 10 years later, this was the enemy, by 1970 or even earlier. In our case, it was earlier. There was the fact we had two surveys. There was the local one, the windscreen survey, the Shaw Daily one. Then there was another one. They sent commissioners overseas, Jack Gaskin and Ray Burkett, And they looked at all the hierarchies of Europe and the Le Corbusier tradition of some magic space and hierarchy. They were impressed by what was being done in Sweden. Now, as far as we were concerned in Hannah Street, what they did, in fact, I suppose they did this everywhere, they proceeded in two stages. The first was called, the first they said an area was proclaimed. And then the second heading was an, sometimes quickly after the proclamation, but sometimes some, even several years later, a household officer was a notice to treat. That was when they were really going to chop you. Now, in 1964, numbers 27, that's Mr. Chair George Sadovic, 27 to 47. The notice to treat was pretty frightening. Now, of course, we objected. You had the right to object. And I'm not quite sure what part of 1964. As part of our objection, we managed to get three letters in support of our objection. One from the Fitzroy Council. Now, we looked it up, the mayor at that time was Florence Peel. We didn't know her. But we did know Councillor Wood. He was one of the three councillors in our division. Now, what do they call them? Not division.
Ward. Ward.
What's the name of the?
Ward.
Ward, sorry, Ward, yes. he was a Councillor Wood. Councillor Wood was marvellous. He wanted a service station on every corner as a traffic car. He said, there's too much traffic in Victoria. You know, this train would have so many accidents. Now, I don't know whether it was because we knew Council or what all. But anyway, the Fitzroy Council supported us with a letter saying, you know, we should be preserved. The Royal Society, oh well, I suppose they went out to, I don't know who, I suppose John approached them. And then the National Trust. So we had three letters from these three organisations. And I think we must have requested a visit from the minister. We must have, otherwise he wouldn't have come. Now, the minister then was Lindsay Thompson, the Minister of Housing. And with him came a couple of commissioners. These were, I think, the two would have been one. This was 64. Then the head of the street was reasonably done up, but it still looked really shabby. And I can remember rushing out and buying a cyclone, God knows why, a cyclone, putting it in the windowsill, anything to distract him from looking at some parts of that. And, actually, the cyclone, I think, obviously, probably didn't even notice. But the flat at the back, the old stable flat, that had been, to some extent, done up. The Murphys had told us to do this. It was a good idea. Yeah. Now, this had a new floor. The new floor smelled really good. You know, new wood. Lindsay Thompson, really liked that. I think he thought the best of the house was pretty ordinary. But I don't think we got a formal letter from him. I really don't think we did. Tom remembers, of course we didn't keep documents, it makes you so cross, doesn't it? All the things you should have kept and haven't. In 1965, I think it was probably just before John died, I think, we got a letter saying that we'd be exempt from selling, an exemption letter. As I say, I haven't got a copy of that. But '66, after John died, we went to England for a year, Tom and I. Now, we returned, in those days, you know, it was a year in every 7 rows. Now, if you took it on leave more often, but for shorter periods of time. Now, I'm coming back. I'm not sure when, but would have been only, I think, a couple of months or less. A letter arrived from the Housing Commission. They wanted to renegotiate the sale of 35. And one of the key senses, we are your only buyers. They intimidated people very much, so that's, if you think, yes, so, I was furious because we had had some sort of an exemption. Now this was, this was 8 years, was it, before the, 8 years, I think, before the, Act, Historic Buildings Preservation Act. Anyway, I mean, there was no,
So it was a forerunner. A forerunner.
Anyway, I was so furious. We had one of those gas stoves, you know, that had to stand at the side with a flat top. I remember standing, writing the letter, the furious letter. I suppose I wrote to the minister, whoever it was, who signed this letter, saying, you want to stay here. Anyway, the letter came back, saying that I could stay as long as I liked. That was all right for me. What about the house? Oh, that's really wild. Anyway, that was the end of it, actually, because later they, I think they didn't really want. I'm not sure. Now, Mr. Chur, with his very fine terrace house, he tried really hard to save his house. And it was obviously such a good repair. I mean, it couldn't have been better. However, no, they said you can't, apparently, you can't get an exemption. Apparently, he wore out the carpet of the Housing Commission. He was determined not to move. Yes. However, to no avail. Yes. Anyway, they said this was a great favour. They said, well, you can demolish the house and build your own. That was the condition under which, you know, he could survive in that particular street, in that particular locality. So, of course, he put concrete all over the floor, over the ground. He built 5 flats with a car park underneath. He stood over the builders every day, you see. I'm sure they're very well built, but most people wouldn't think they approved the look of the street. And that was the falling one tree. really. But then, I mean, one of many. But it's just interesting we have to know about us living next door.
Is he living usually in one of the flats?
No, they moved to two. Now this is going to be a fairly difficult special story. You rushed out and you pushed out, if you've got the money, you live in a so-called desirable suburb. If you don't, you drift onto the next spot. Yes. Well look, that's all right.
Larry, that's nice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for all of your preparation on that.